Hello and welcome to the TalkCast Pod Show, the number one show on the internet and the masters of magics. I'm your host and bringer of chaos, Lanny, and I'm joined this week by Theseus's shipwright, Kaiser Neko.
Am I the original one, or am I just, you know, have I molted my skin enough times where I'm a new one?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. Does that really make a difference? And we are joined this week by the mechanical wunderkind, Stefan.
Yeah, I guess that's me.
Yup, it is now.
Okay.
Yeah, don't. You haven't been on here enough to get used to the stupid titles he gives you.
And the new NPR like tone that Nick's going for, like it's no longer like
welcome to the.
Is now it's like welcome to the show. We're going to.
I have some wonderful green and lychee tea here, so I'm all mellowed out, man. Like, I'm good.
Okay, this isn't like a usual thing. This is just.
I'm also trying to evolve with the times. I know my energy can be unbearable. But what is not unbearable is the latest addition I've added to the show, which is called The Rundown, where we go over some pop cultural geeky topics that's going on this week that I don't really want to dedicate a whole show to, let's be honest. For example, Anthem is dead.
Good. Long live Anthem.
And apparently as a result, the next BioWare game is going to be it's going to be Dragon Age, and it's actually going to be a Dragon Age game. So that's
exactly.
Nice to hear.
Exactly. I've written down here, Anthem died so that Dragon Age might live.
Maybe, yeah.
Potentially. Although, that also means that whatever they had presently, like, previously been developing is now being scrapped, and they have to, like, kind of go back and redo stuff, unless they're trying to work that same BioWare magic, and nothing's been developed yet, and they're just going to do it in the next year.
Well, I highly doubt it, because that went really bad for them, and I imagine they want to, like, actually sell copies of the game. But, like, this will be the third time they've scrapped a Dragon Age 4 and had to make a new one. This time without two of the major heads of the last three Dragon Age games. So we'll see how it goes. I want it to be good. I'm playing through Inquisition right now, actually, because I never got through it, because there's major parts of Inquisition that are fucking unbearable.
How are you liking the single player MMO?
When you ignore, like, and this is the advice I got about the game, is if you basically ignore huge swaths of the game, it's good. And that's true. It's actually true. If you ignore a huge portion of the game and maybe mod it so that you don't have to have a stupid mobile game thing going on at the war table, it's a pretty good game with a pretty good story. Too bad they don't get to put all their time investing in that part that's actually good.
Yeah.
I hope the next one gets to do that. And stops with the open world bullshit. Like, they collect a billion things. No, I don't want it. I want to experience a Dragon Age story. God damn it.
No, go flower picking for Iron Bull for about an hour. Go do it.
Listen, I'm behind the times. How does this tie into the hit Netflix animated series?
Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, you're thinking of Dragon's Dogma.
Well,
fake
just
gamer.
I am, in fact, a fake gamer. I'm sorry.
Dragon Age animated series would be pretty cool, though.
A Dragon Age animated movie.
I've never seen it.
There was a short film with Felicia Day back when Dragon Age 2 came out.
Yeah, Funimation worked on that. Dragon Age Dawn of the Seeker. That was it.
Yeah.
That was back when, like, every game franchise was trying to have, like, a little tie-in movie. I know Dead Space had one. Did Mass Effect do one?
Yes,
they did. Our friend Mark Swint was in it.
With Freddie Prinze Jr.
Uh-huh. I don't know why that inflection came out of me. It just did.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of uh-huh, apparently the Snyder Cut accidentally got leaked last week when the VOD, like the, you know, the thing where you click on to watch the Tom and Jerry movie.
I think part of it did, not the whole thing.
For a period of time, that, like, the Tom and Jerry, like, trying to watch Tom and Jerry opened a portal to, like, a chunk of the Snyder Cut on the HBO Max client, and I haven't really heard much about it, but I do think that I want to cover the Snyder Cut and the state of DC in general in a future TalkCast Pod show, because I think it's it's worth talking about, I think.
I'm probably going to watch the Snyder Cut, not because I want to, but because, I mean, it's a train. It's a train wreck. It's a train wreck. It's a spectacle.
And it is a spectacle. But you know what? I recently found the time to go back and watch the definitive edition of Batman v Superman. And while I still stick to my guns that I think this entire thing probably would have been better as a miniseries, which maybe they can lean into going forward, it's not as bad as I remember it in theaters. In a bubble, I think it was okay. I still disagree with a lot of the source material choices, but it's not as bad of a movie as I remember.
It'd be better if Zack Snyder liked any comic that wasn't written by Frank Miller. That'd be nice.
Yeah, like I said, some of the source material choices, they made some decisions.
He only likes fascist Batman. It's
true.
They made some choices.
I just want to note in the clip, we got to hear the patented Jared Leto Joker laugh. You know how that goes? Mm. It sounds more like the fucking Penguin.
Yeah.
So I only saw a little bit of the actual clip, and I'd like to point out that as the guy here, who may have been the most toxic and vitriolic when it comes to Snyder's name even coming up in conversation, I am willing to believe that the director's cut version of Batman vs. Superman is actually a better movie. I've never seen it, so I can't say.
I'm not willing to accept it's a good movie. Maybe better.
It is definitely better.
Yeah, I would definitely have to see it before I could even give credence to the idea that it could be a good movie. But
it's still a movie where a major story element is a woman, Elastigirl, looking over and seeing a jar of piss and then exploding. So
which sounds
like it should be funnier than it is.
To be completely honest with you, it's really funny, but not for the reason that they meant for it to be.
Yeah, like
that being said, a lot of people have talked about, like, and I want to get serious for a moment if we're going to talk, when it comes to Snyder's, mental state when he was trying to make this movie. I know that there was a lot going on. I know that the death of his daughter has come up. There are a lot of things that are going into this version, this cut, everything that's coming out.
And a lot of hindsight, too.
Yeah, a lot of hindsight.
Well, and I've stated on Twitter, like, this opinion that, like, I don't like Zack Snyder's movies. I haven't liked a single one I've ever seen.
I really like 300. But I was also like the right age and the right mindset to really like it when it came out.
Yeah, if you go back, you might not like it as much anymore.
It has some unfortunate undertones and ideas. But what
the studio basically used his daughter's death to push him off of the movie because they didn't want him making it. And for that reason alone, I'm kind of glad he gets the Snyder Cut, even though it's a massive waste of time and money.
Yeah, because in all honesty, it's the studio that's mishandled this thing more than he has. They threw him into this thing and said, do us a Marvel now.
They should have known better, like, is really the thing. But they don't. They don't know anything better. They're in the middle of making the same group of people as Mill making a gritty Powerpuff Girls reboot, so sequel.
Ultimately the point that I wanted to say was I have very little faith after seeing all of Snyder's movies and I actually like Legends of the Guardians of Ga'Hoole or whatever the fuck it was. I thought that was fun. But generally, being somebody who does not enjoy his interpretation of comics, thinks he is it can be a fantastic visual artist and nothing else, and thinks that he as a person is kind of shit, if I'm going to be real honest,
I don't know enough about him as a person to make any of those types of judgment.
I'm just going off of interviews with him where he's been incredibly crass and just kind of a total ass. Like, there's a reason I think that a lot of his really hardcore dedicated fan base is full of as many obnoxious assholes as it is. Like,
I've talked to some people that have worked around him, and they say that he's like a good nice guy to work with. So
I believe that because we would have heard something, but like, we haven't heard any Michael Bay-esque stories, even though he's a Michael Bay-esque creative force. But that said, the fact that he wants to adapt Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged really badly tells me all I need to know about him as a person for me.
I love how I've been trying to make this point for the last 3 minutes. Okay. So,
well, go on.
my point ultimately is that I'm willing to sit down and watch this and give it a fair shake. I want to, if only because I know that I live in the pop culture sphere, so I have to really sit down and give this a fair fucking shake if I'm going to be able to talk about anything Snyder related ever again. And I know that I'll have to, because Snyder is going to continue to be a thing in the nerd sphere. Yeah. So I'll sit down, I'll give it a fair shake, I'll watch it, and I'll try and forget that my opinions on the guy and his movies. I'll do my best. I'm always going to have a bias because I've hated his movies and I think he's obnoxious. But hey, I'm willing to give it a try.
I want you to hold on to that point, because when we do talk about the Snyder Cut, this point will have already been made and you can truncate that significantly so we don't have to talk over you.
Hooray.
You made us do this. How could you make us talk over you, Scott?
Honestly, like I do feel bad when I talk over you, and I know I have a habit of doing that, but the way you talk around your point so much and swerve into various different tangents within it is why I feel like, you know, oh, I need to make this point here for that, and et cetera, et cetera.
If it weren't for the fact that the internet is fucking obnoxious and will jump on my point if I don't cover every goddamn base... I mean, look, I am not above blaming the people for the reason that every point I ever make has to be double and triple and quadruple checked. I'm sorry.
Well, on the other end of things, I'm going to watch it specifically and only to laugh at it. So that's where
I'm at. Hey, good on you, man.
I'm going to give it a nice, good old fair view. I've been on a superhero kick lately. And you know what? I actually think the fact that there aren't a billion Marvel movies coming out around this might actually help. Because... let's be honest, Disney just kind of has the market of the theater market. Like that's just Disney's. But moving away from Disney for a moment before we jump whole hog into Disney, new TMNT games coming out. A nice little retro callback to the arcade beat 'em ups. Looks really cool. It was just announced today.
Yeah. Oh, wait, hold on. And being made by the studio who made Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm. Revenge of the Shredder.
I didn't know that was a new game. I thought they were taking the old game and like re-releasing it with a new opening. That's a new game.
No, man. It's new.
New game in that style with like really pretty pixel art.
Oh,
and a very well
so
animated
cool.
teaser trailer.
I saw the teaser trailer. I didn't pay very close attention. I think if I had, I might have noticed that was a new game and not just like a remaster of the old one. That's really cool. I'm very excited about that then. Oh, wow.
They have a cool trailer. The trailer's filled with a bunch of references to a bunch of different TMNT properties. Even though it's like mostly homaging the original stuff.
Excited.
Yeah, it's cool.
One other thing video game related that happened between the last TalkCast, where we talked a lot about video games, and this one. I'd say the PlayStation event, but they really didn't show a whole lot that was worth talking about. I'm still excited for Kenna. But the Pokemon thing, apparently we're getting remakes of Diamond and Pearl and the Legends Arceus game, which looks like it's going to be an actual next-gen Pokemon game.
I'm very excited. I don't care about Diamond and Pearl. Legends? Oh, yeah. Oh, give me.
I do really hope that little this is a beta early gameplay thing is true, because it doesn't look very pretty.
Some shots look gorgeous. Other shots, like most of the ones with the Pokemon just hanging around, look awful. So yeah, it obviously needs a lot of work. I think the reason that we even saw this early of like footage from it was because they realized that Diamond and Pearl was going to be controversial, and and so they were like, okay, we gotta also show something else. What about some stuff from Legends?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how these things pan out. And one last thing before I get into some TFS related stuff, Helsing is getting a live action film adaptation through Amazon with a script being penned by John Wick writer Derek Kolstad. I'm interested. I hope this turns out I hope this turns out more Blade 2 than Underworld Evolution.
Underworld Evolution isn't the exact correct tone.
It might be the correct tone, but I think Blade 2 is the better movie.
Yeah, I won't lie. I'm actually really, really excited at this concept. Like, when I heard about it, I don't know. I think it could be really cool and really fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I've hit a place where whenever anyone announces a live action adaptation of anything that's already been animated, I ask, why? What is this adding? What can you do that animation can't? And the answer is usually nothing. So,
yeah,
that's, you know, hey, look, that's actually incredibly fair. But I will say this, when it comes to like these, I do think that they could do some really cool. I don't know if they will, considering it's an Amazon movie, is it?
Yeah,
the Amazon production studio is the thing that announced it. So, yes.
OK, I think they could do some really cool visual things like in with the CG and the monsters and the blood and the gore. I think you can do some really cool stuff with that if they do it right. I don't know if they're going to, though, when they have if they've got who knows, budget, time, talent.
We already know it's a movie and not a series, although it could be a series of movies if the first one does well enough. We'll have to see. But I wanted to just shoot this out there, kind of like I did with the My Hero thing. Who would you fan cast in just some of these roles? I have a few written out here. The obvious one that I think came to everybody's lips that I actually did not put on mine, but I'll just say it flat out. A lot of people are saying like, oh, Keanu for Alucard. I could see it, but lean more towards somebody a bit younger, maybe like a Kit Harington type.
I'd say no to both of those because you need, frankly, the character of Alucard, even in the original anime, is really out there and really wild. You need a character actor. You need someone who can at least act like a character actor and be big and eat up the scenery. And neither Kit Harington nor Keanu Reeves can eat scenery. They're good at what but what they do is not that.
I've only seen Kit Harington do one thing, but I'd be interested in seeing him try something else.
Maybe, but you might want it to be very low stakes in like a secondary role somewhere.
Maybe, but one of my hot takes, one that I think would be really cool for Walter, I think somebody like Idris Elba could be really fucking cool.
Could be. The implications of him having that role could be a little weird not pleasant. But
maybe, but I just think of him as like a badass older man and just I could see it.
Yeah, it's just also the servant role is a bit But that said,
Walter's more of a bodyguard, let's be honest. But
honestly, when it comes to trying to cast for these things, one of my first one of my first ideas that I had, and I know that this is probably just because he's been on my mind a lot, what with him being in the media so much. But I actually, and this may seem a little weird, think that Henry Cavill would make a fantastic Alucard.
He's also pretty low key when it comes to his.
Yeah, I know.
I could maybe see him as. I could see him potentially being an Anderson type. Who I had written down for Anderson was somebody like Viggo Mortensen.
Hmm.
Uh-huh.
Like the shape of his face, his demeanor, I could see it.
I was actually thinking Gerard Butler for him.
So far, no one Irish. Not a single Irish actor so far.
That's fair. That's actually fair. Unfortunately, when it comes to actors, I have to like sit down and basically do a bunch of research because I don't follow a lot of actors.
Yeah, I just thought that'd be a little fun. And I'm interested to see what we learn from it as it comes along, because there is another live action anime movie series an anime adaptation that got turned into live action movies that I actually really enjoyed, which were the Rurouni Kenshin movies, which I guess in a small tangent is also getting a finale for its series coming soon as well.
Yep.
I have nothing I would like to say about Rurouni Kenshin or anything surrounding it.
That's fair. Yep. I thought the live action movies kicked ass though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not about the quality of the movies.
Yep. It's not about the movies.
Oh, I am well aware of what's tied to it.
Oh yeah, I think we all are. Which is why
I'm only talking about the quality of the films itself. But in a few TFS announcements, I want to shout out there to anybody who's subscribed over here or a patron. You all now have access to the tabletop role-playing game that I've been working on, as it's now in beta for our subscribers and patrons. Ready to Roll. I've been working on it for a very long time, a better part of 2 years. It's super easy to pick up and play as a concept. I put a huge emphasis on customization and story-based roleplay, and I'd love to get anybody's feedback if you're interested. I have produced a series of one-shots, some of which are on the TFS Gaming YouTube channel, some of which are on my personal Twitch archive channel, Lenny Playtor. So feel free to check those out if you're interested in seeing how it runs. Also, over on the Unexpectables Twitch, every other Saturday, Connor is hosting a campaign for Ready to Roll set in the Fallout universe called Gateway. And it's a lot of fun. I'm one of the players in that. And last on this list, before we get to the meat of today's sandwich, I know it's a long roll up for this one, but some of you may remember last year, before everything shut down, we had a little showcase stream to promote all the projects that we were working on since the finale of DBZA. Unfortunately, the pandemic shuttered or postponed a lot of those projects. But in the interim, we decided to focus on the things that we could make, and in doing so, are now going to be hosting another spring showcase stream on Friday the 19th, right here on this channel, to give you a sweet, sweet taste of what we've been cooking up. So set your calendars. This is the announcement for that, and I'm very excited for what we got coming out.
Yeah, there's several projects that I've been so psyched to show people, and oh my god, all of them, Stefan, you've been working on.
It's been a busy year for me.
Yeah.
Because like since you know, not a lot of go outside, we can't film in places with safely, it's been a lot of animation work, which I have not been the only animator, but I have been the only animator.
But you are the primary animator
of the original projects. But you know, we have a couple really cool things and one live action thing that is still existing. because it's more small scale. We're very excited to show it off. And some of the patrons might already know one of the shows, Magic Time Wizards. We're going to be showing that off, and we're also going to be showing off a preview episode 2. And on that day, patrons will be getting episode 2 to see a full, like, at least a month ahead of when we release it on YouTube. So
yeah.
So keep your ears out, because we'll be announcing more about what will be on this showcase coming up on our social medias, on Instagram, on Twitter, pretty much anywhere that you can hear us. Just give us a follow and you'll be more in the know.
Guys,
gentlemen,
I can't wait.
I am very excited as well.
Well said.
I'm also very excited to talk about WandaVision, because a lot has happened, you know, the season finale happened since the last time we talked about it about a month ago. And we made a lot of predictions. Quinn made a lot of predictions that turned out to be very, very accurate.
Yeah. If it weren't for the fact, like, so we wanted to bring Stefan on this time just because he hasn't been on in a while and he had some stuff he wanted to talk about with WandaVision.
Kudos to Quinn for his foresight in a lot of those mechanics that we were being introduced to.
Yeah, goddamn. Matt was like fucking a sniper with some of that shit. Fuck.
Local Texan just taking it down. But, man, I'm glad. By the way, major spoilers. If you haven't seen WandaVision, dip now. We're going to be talking about everything. I am happy that one of my predictions came true, because how could it not have? Catherine Hahn was just way too big of a character in these episodes to not be a big force in this show. And when that reveal finally happened, I was like, I fucking knew it.
It was for anyone who knew of the character, it was pretty well, like, foreshadowed. Maybe too foreshadowed.
I'm not much of a wiki diver, and I don't pay attention to a lot of social media banter about these shows when I'm the shows that I'm absorbing, because I know there's a lot of people that do that wiki dive and do that theory crafting stuff. So whenever I see, like, you know, WandaVision trending on Twitter, I'm like, ignore. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I can be as spoiler free as possible.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say, before we like really get into talking about it, we should probably just do a quick thing and just, what did everyone think, right?
I liked it. I'm a little, like some of the internet, I was a little disappointed that it did just eventually evolve into another Marvel staple of characters with similar powers battling it out in the climactic moments.
They did like, hero double thing twice in the same series. That was, yes, it's a little obnoxious.
And that was the thing that I'm like, really? Like, you can't. I like the Marvel movies where the villain that they're fighting is not a replica of the hero, even though I know that's a huge trope and it's an easy way to show off, like, ah, this hero is fighting another version of themselves, therefore they are the better version of themselves. So thematically. But it just gets so repetitive. I mean, it happened in Iron Man. It happened in the, is it non-canon now Incredible Hulk movie?
No, it's canon.
Yeah. It's canon? Okay. So Mark Ruffalo got facial reconstructive surgery. And it happened in Ant-Man. It happened in
Black Panther.
It happened in pretty much all of them. Guardians of the Galaxy was a standout because it was a bunch of somewhat normies, quote unquote normies, fighting a superpowered Titan.
Yeah, also, actually, Captain Marvel fought an entire team of people who were very similar to her. Though that one's a little different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy, thank God, both movies had, like, did not do that. And at the very least,
Spider-Man, you never do that, because none of his heroes are just, except for Venom, I guess. But luckily, they're staying away from Venom for now.
So for me, I really, really liked WandaVision. And then episode 7 happened. And then I didn't stop liking it, but I kind of realized that they had this really, really cool plan from the very beginning. And then the last 3 episodes of that season just felt really
they made it through all the eras of sitcoms, though. You got to give them credit for that one.
That whole concept was not only brilliant, but OK, so Cosmonaut Marcus, if anybody knows him, he actually did a review and I liked his review for the most part, but there was one thing he said that a couple of other people have said that I am just steadfast not on board with. Hmm. He said that those, like, all the sitcom stuff wasn't funny. For me, I grew up with all of these different kinds of sitcoms. I watched all this stuff. Getting to see it all so, like, slavishly followed and played to, that was hilarious. I think it was so funny to me just because of how dedicated and how faithful they were. That was funnier to me than like any of the jokes they try to commit to.
I'll admit, I lost my shit at the Malcolm in the Middle opening episode.
Right. Yeah,
well, and that's the thing, though. You just said you thought the aesthetic was funnier than the jokes.
Yeah, because a lot of the jokes that they were writing were...
It was entertaining.
Well, I mean,
Semantics.
I mean,
that's what people are saying. Like, the jokes weren't funny. And I think they're right. Like, I think Malcolm in the Middle episode, like episode 6, I believe that was the funniest one when it came to the actual jokes.
Yeah.
But even then, it didn't hit the flashbacks
of their childhood. And
yeah. But even then, it didn't have quite the bite of a Malcolm in the Middle episode. It fell just short. I guess just to say rough, like, what I think, I really enjoyed the experience of watching WandaVision all the way through. I think the show itself is a mixed bag. I think it's good, but it's far from great. Like, by the time you get to the end.
I don't know how they're going to do a season 2. Like, it definitely can't carry the same flavor. The whole thing behind WandaVision is it's a play on the word television and... Like, whatever you do next season, which I think they clearly want to do.
Oh, God, they're not doing the WandaVision season 2.
They haven't announced that.
They haven't announced it, but this has been very successful for them.
Yeah, but no,
this show can't have a season 2.
Yeah, no, there is no season 2.
I don't know that it can.
Yeah.
Like, they might do another series with Wanda and Vision, but I don't think it'll be called WandaVision.
also the like the last episode of this was called the series finale, unless they wanted to do a reboot, which I think that's kind of stretching the premise a little bit.
I don't think they're coming back to this concept, bare minimum.
Yeah.
They might do another series with Wanda and Vision, and that'd be fine.
I hope not dedicated to them.
I think, like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier is a potential show that might have multiple seasons. Loki's a show that might have multiple seasons, but this one was clearly built to be relatively insular.
Yeah. I can wholeheartedly see we'll have to watch Falcon and Winter Soldier. It very well could have like a story that can't be followed up on. Who knows? But the premise alone, it's like, oh yeah, I could see this being a long-running TV show.
And the premise
show.
Of that show is just it features Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Right.
And then maybe season two would be called Captain America and the Winter Soldier. But
the premise of Loki seems to be, what if Doctor Who was chaotic neutral? WandaVision, so, though, it does bridge some interesting gaps. Like, it opens up the bridge for obviously Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, or I think that's yes. What it's called.
Yes, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
And it opens up the realm to Captain Marvel 2 with Monica Rambeau, who I am ashamed to say it took me forever to realize she was a character in Captain Marvel, because I'd only seen that movie once and I found it incredibly forgettable.
You're not
so
wrong.
I kind of forgot that she existed.
Me too.
until they brought it up. I recognized her when I saw the mom. When I saw the mom's picture, I was like, oh, I remember her from the first movie because she looks like how she looked in Captain Marvel. But I will say, like, yeah, all those bridges to other Marvel properties, that's actually what kind of cooled me on this show, because I feel like all that shit really dragged the finale in particular down.
A bit, maybe.
For me, it was significant because it was Wanda's story the entire time. And to have Monica Rambeau just sort of like get a weird, like, she exists here to in order to sequel hook to Captain Marvel 2, and that's it. Which,
yeah.
I liked Monica as a character. I enjoyed when I saw her, but it seems like she might have been better served if, like, you wanted to do a setup for Captain Marvel 2, just make an Agents of S.W.O.R.D. show and have her be a lead in that, and make a little short series where she gets her powers in that instead.
I don't know if you'd be able to sell that show as I think they actually made the right decision not to do that, because that show, like, you're talking about putting an entire production behind a character that at the writing of WandaVision, you're not sure everybody is going to be hooked by. Like, you write her as well as you can, and you, like, the actress did a phenomenal job doing what she needed to do. But you're not sure about, you're never sure about how the audience is going to respond. And
true, but that was true when they were making individual superhero films before making the Avengers, you know?
A lot of those superheroes already had some name recognition behind them. The biggest gamble they took was on Guardians of the Galaxy, I think. Sorry, Kaiser, you were going to say?
No, it's okay. I think the issue that we run into is that Monica Rambeau is Monica Rambeau, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. I really liked her character, like, legitimately. In fact, I liked
likes Monica, Jimmy, and Darcy.
Yeah, I actually, like, to be completely honest with you, their scenes, like, outside of Wanda's bubble, I really enjoyed those. I actively wanted to see how they were going to figure out what was going on. Like, the way that they tapped into the feed and were commenting on it was actually really funny and cute and interesting. I liked the way that developed. I think, what's his face? The director dude who ended up being, like, a secondary villain. Kind
Johnny
of obnoxious.
Bad guy.
Like, oh my god. Like, he went, man, it was like a quick descent into just, I'm the worst. He's just the worst. Like, immediately, I'm willing.
I created an evil version of the Vision. Also, we might bomb this town. Let's figure out what's up.
Yeah. I liked all of that stuff going on, but ultimately, their stories did not, like, specifically Monica's, didn't exactly tie well into Wanda's story. And at the end of the day, this was all supposed to be Wanda's story. Like,
I actually think, like, it would have... Sorry, I didn't... You keep going.
No, all I was going to say was, like, I wouldn't have minded this... I would not have minded the setup if they had more competently and more organically made Monica a part of the story. Because at first they did. At first, her involvement was very interesting. But the moment she gets thrown out, after she comes back in, she's still separate from it. And I think that's partially because they had to do fucking Agatha Harkness to be the final villain and White Vision. And so what the fuck is Monica even doing there?
I think what they needed was one extra scene. Literally just one in the middle of the battle between Wanda and Agatha. You have a down moment where Scarlet Witch is not doing well. She's struggling with you know, everything. And she and Monica have a heart-to-heart and finally get to connect, which is something they kept setting up was going to happen and should happen.
I thought that was going to happen during that like moment where they were actually having that kind of cool standoff when Monica came back in.
Right. And then they withheld it again. So it's like, okay, that's where the story's building to, right? Apparently not, because they didn't do that scene. And that's the only scene that's missing.
Yeah.
That's what was needed.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. They don't have any emotional payoff. Like, there's some emotional payoff for Monica getting the powers and coming to terms with things and growing past her trauma. And then, like, that reflecting on Wanda. Like, that moment where she's like, I went through my own trauma, but I had to overcome it. Now you do, too. And that's cool, but it comes too late.
It should have been part of the finale, not... Because, like, they had them have a little talk afterwards, but it was just about... They'll never know what you sacrificed to help them. It's like, well, okay, she put them in that situation and tortured them. They shouldn't care what she had to sacrifice.
Bringing all that up, though, I'm actually thinking, because the episode where that we expected that payoff to take place, not necessarily during the climactic battle, but that entire episode. Because this is the episode where they reveal at the end that it was Agatha all along.
Yeah, episode 7.
And I'm wondering if they kept going with that because maybe erroneously, probably erroneously, at least in terms of Monica's character, as kind of a fake out to you in the audience still believing the entire time that this is all just Wanda dealing with her trauma. When in the end, it's not just the fact that it's all Wanda, it's Wanda's trauma, but Agatha also kind of pulling the strings along the way. And that with all of those pre-baked notions of, oh, Monica's going to help her by giving her the, you know, the friendship therapy that she needs. And that's how it's going to solve in the end. And oh, never mind. There's a twist. I think maybe that was what they were going for.
Maybe. But it ends up being ultimately unsatisfying because the story is clearly about Wanda dealing with grief and trauma. And death. And while they mostly, like, those elements were landed really well, I thought, in the finale, they felt like they had to do this Marvel bullshit, right? Where it's like, all right, we gotta make her really the Scarlet Witch now. We gotta talk about magic. And I find that stuff interesting. I do like that stuff. But that's not what this story was about. And the finale made it about that. And that's what's unsatisfying.
You know, and it also, and look, I understand that that people, when they tune into something that's superhero related, at some point want a fight. They want a fight. They want action scenes. And I get that.
Yeah. And I liked how they capped off the fight, too. It was kind of clever. It was fun. It felt right for what they set up.
Yes.
But that's not return of cooler to
but
me.
But the rest of the show wasn't setting that up.
Yeah. And also... Like, look, I like the whole Ship of Theseus thing with Vision. Now there's just another Vision out there. How is he powered?
No. There's just the Vision.
Okay.
The real Vision is out there now.
True. We have a reborn, a resurrected Vision. How is he powered? How is that going? You know, it doesn't matter.
They explained it a little bit where it's like, because we know vibranium can be used to harness power and used as a power source. Vibranium is kind of a MacGuffin metal.
And they needed, like, after he was rebuilt, they needed Wanda's Wanda's power to interact with him because her power is connected to the Mind Stone.
Oh yeah, like, somebody says he has a mini arc reactor in his head, which, you know what, I'll
buy
that.
Which would make a lot of sense. And then Vision, you know, Wanda's Vision gave him, like, unlocked all of his memories by tapping into his database. And so now Vision is out there, although he didn't immediately go to Wanda, which is confusing to me in a lot of ways.
Because they still have to end this story.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, like, they did a few, like, contrived weird things in order to cap off the story with the correct scene, which it was a good scene, but, like, they have the characters do weird things, like have Wanda and Vision just leave their children that are about to die in a room. And like, all right, kids, you're going to die. We're going to go talk now.
Not die, cease to exist.
I mean, honestly, I won't lie. That part. Okay, so while I have a lot of issues with the last couple of episodes, and I do, I thought the Breaking the Fourth Wall episode was really badly paced and did not nearly take as much advantage of it could of its premise. And, yeah, as we've talked about, the actual ending with the fight and all that bullshit. But the one part that actually did get me, the part that I legitimately teared up at and felt emotional resonance with, was the actual ending where everything finally comes to an end.
Yeah,
I'm a sap though. Like I express a lot of emotions when I am like I can very easily empathetically view what a like character stuff. So I cry at the drop of a hat in a lot of movies. I cried at the beginning of freaking Star Trek the reboot when Chris Hemsworth killed himself to save his family. Like that's me.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and it was a good scene. Like, I think it was worth it to get to that scene. But it is the setup into getting to that scene requires them to not be with their children as they slip into non-existence, which feels wrong.
I really liked that because that kind of felt like, hey, now go to sleep. You know, we'll see you in the morning. Like that,
it reminded me of that scene in Titanic.
Even though we know for a fact that those kids can read their dad's mind, and he knows what's up.
Well, they may not have. I mean, they might have been just, they might have believed, like, that's the thing that makes it so emotionally devastating is that as far as those kids knew, nothing was wrong. And mom and dad didn't want them to know anything was wrong. Like, that's why they put them to sleep and then went downstairs for it all to come down. That's why I like that. The don't make the kids worry, just put them to bed. Like, that's incredibly dark.
I like that as a scene concept, and I know that Wanda and Vision needed their last moment alone together.
Yeah, yeah.
Like so I understand why it happened.
But it is a thing where, like, no parent would leave their children in that scenario. Even if they wanted them to feel like everything was all right, they would never leave them there. That's even not a thing a parent would do.
Even if they knew that the children didn't technically exist anyway.
Yeah, no, that would, under no circumstances would they allow that to happen.
I don't know. I think it would have been way more emotionally devastating to have been in that room with her kids disappearing.
Yes, but they still want to be there.
Also, she wouldn't be standing on the floor anymore. The second story of that house doesn't exist.
Yeah, there's that too. But yeah, no, it's one of those things where I get why it needed to happen. I think it was the right decision for the show. But it is, it's just an example of that's just the tiny little things they have to do to make the ending work with everything else they put in the show, which includes White Vision, which includes Monica, which includes, like, I guess Darcy just disappearing. She crashes in the Hayward and then just, like, slips away.
I thought about that, like, that scene where it's like, what about Darcy? And they explain her away. I'm like, was this a reshoot? Did they come back to reshoot the scene and they just couldn't get Kat Dennings?
Yeah, I don't know. But, like, it was a lot of moments like that. Like, because of all this shit they were putting into the show, one of the things it felt like the show started as a passion project that someone really wanted to make and wanted to, like, explore these characters with. And then it felt like it became what the producers wanted, which is
they need that vertical integration to sell all their other products.
It's their primary business strategy at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, And like, I like all this I like the Marvel bullshit, but it didn't feel like it belonged in this story.
No, absolutely not. Okay. So let's talk about Marvel bullshit and the fact that they kept hinting at more, because they absolutely kept hinting at more.
And I think they didn't realize it sometimes.
Well, that is the business model. Marvel, hint at more.
I think in some ways they didn't intend to hint at some things. Like, they did not intend to hint at Reed Richards. That was an accident.
But actually, you say that, but literally there was an interview saying that the aerospace engineer was going to be a big thing. They said that in an interview.
They said specifically the aerospace engineer, or they said there was going to be a cameo?
No, they said the aerospace engineer in the interview.
Okay.
And then nothing came of it. And to be completely honest, the way they set that up, like, I've got this guy, he's, and then it turns out, oh no, it's nobody important. They don't even mention the name. I think we see her for like 5 seconds, and then we get the fucking truck. That doesn't mean anything. There's a bunch of buildup, and then it doesn't actually mean anything.
You have to save some of this for Winter Soldier and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
I mean, it would be very...
If you don't think they are going to introduce the concept of the Fantastic Four, like, now that they have it there, I don't know where else they might.
And I thought
they were going to do it with Spider-Man, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I'm game for that. And I think they already have in Spider-Man. I am 100% convinced the rebuilt Avengers Tower is the Baxter Building.
Yeah.
I have been convinced of that since very early on, and... having Spider-Man I was thinking about that since
Homecoming, because they're moving the stuff out of New York. It's like, I wonder who's buying it.
Yeah, and then and then they show it rebuilt in Spider-Man. It's like, yeah, they're clearly setting up the Fantastic Four. Johnny Storm is one of Peter Parker's best friends. It's going to be awesome. And that stuff excites me. I love it. I love when it's subtle, too. Like, I love that WandaVision has subtly set up how people can start hating superpowered people in general, and how there might be a problem with mutants after that. Like, they're setting up a social environment that's going to be hostile towards mutants. I really like that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Wanda just set back, you know, all mutant people for a really long time.
Yeah.
Also, she better House of Emmett.
Also, I felt like what they did with... I don't know what they thought they were doing with Pietro, but boy... was that weird?
Yeah, like I
was weird as hell.
Part of me is really that they're not doing multiverse shit, because I hate the multiverse shit. I don't
wait for Doctor Strange.
yeah, well, like in Doctor Strange, I can take it. That's his thing. I hate it with normal Marvel superhero stuff because it can often just ruin shit. You know,
I mean, I think
Spider-Verse as a base concept usually ruins stuff. The fact that Spider-Verse was just a movie about Spider-Verse stuff helped that movie. But, like, people keep talking about they want Spider-Man 3 to be a Spider-Verse thing. I vehemently do not. Or vehemently. But I really don't, because I think it will ruin that movie if that's what they do.
And I don't want
it to be. And Pietro not being from an alternate universe is a sign that maybe they know that that would be stupid.
I don't want it. I do not want the next Spider-Man movie to be multiverse. I actively would hate that, because we already have the Spider-Verse movies and they're amazing.
And like, yeah, okay, put the first Tom one's Holland really in those. Good. Like, that'd be fun. Put Tom Holland in those movies. Don't change his movie.
Yeah.
That's my perspective.
But I'm afraid that it's going to be like they keep getting actors from other Spider-Man movies in, and apparently coming back as their characters. That's got me nervous.
But it seems like it might be a J.K. Simmons situation where they're just doing it, right? Like, they're just like, well, these actors worked the first time, right?
I would like that. I would really.
That's what it seems like it is, because, like, Tom Holland's been actually stating in interviews, like, there's no other spider people in this movie. It's just this Peter Parker story. And I believe them. And also, they already have Charlie Cox showing up in the movie, potentially as Matt Murdock. Who else would he show up as? And that's fan bullshit that I love, right? Give me that kind of bullshit where, like, characters are interacting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I don't need other spider people. They had their time in the sun. They're done. But anyway, like, yeah, like, and I, so part of me was relieved with fake Pietro just being a fake Pietro.
Ralph Boner?
Yeah. But but part of me was also like, but I kind of just this once did want to move the Fox Universe Quicksilver over, just because they killed Quicksilver off way too fast.
They did. They really did. I love speedsters too.
He had. There was a lot more stories to tell with that character, and now that's just not going to happen. But at the same time, them just saying, "All right, well, that's just the consequence of what we did, and we need to live with it in order to preserve the meaning of death in this universe." Like, you can play fast and loose with Vision. You cannot play fast and loose with normal human beings with death. Otherwise, it's going to be like the comic books where no one ever accepts that anyone's dead, and it sucks. Well,
I mean, they kind of already are playing a little fast and loose. I mean, they brought back Gamora after a very heart-wrenching scene of losing her.
They did. That's a very specific circumstance that they can't repeat.
Yeah, I got to admit, I'm glad.
And also that Gamora is still dead. This Gamora is a different person.
That version of Gamora is still dead. But you have so many avenues to actually bring people back now. You have Loki, who is traveling through space and time using the Tesseract. You have Wanda, who can literally rip open chaos gates, and God only knows what they're going to introduce in the Doctor Strange movie.
Directly ties into Scarlet Witch.
Oh, yes, of course it does.
They've said it.
Okay.
The thing is, I think the leg up that we have when it comes to the MCU over comic books is that actors age and die themselves.
Yeah.
And therefore the concept of death has to stick at least a little bit more often than not. Right.
Well, as Tony far as Stark we've seen, is not death coming has actually back. Stuck more often than not in the MCU.
Yeah, exactly. Like Tony Stark's not coming back. He's never coming back. He's fucking dead.
Of course
dead.
Not. No. That is one that you kind of have to stand fast by.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. And like Peter Parker is, if he's going to, as long as he continues to exist in the MCU, he's going to grow up. No one's going to do some Mephisto bullshit and put him back in college. Right. Like we get to actually see characters grow up and change, and you can't stop the linear movement of time in order to make the MCU last forever.
You're not bringing back Thanos. You're not bringing back. Any of the villains, really.
And that's what makes me kind of prefer the MCU to comic books, because comic books, they won't fucking stop, right? They'll just keep bringing these characters back. They'll keep repeating things. Steve Rogers dead. He's back within a year. Oh, okay.
Usually that comes with a lot of these, at least in terms of big comic events, come with a reboot attached to it where it's, okay, we're wiping the timeline and here's a new chapter of the multiverse. This is the iconic universe. I don't know.
Right. But like the MCU knows that if they do that, they're going to massively hurt people's investment in the series.
Yes.
As much as people will complain and like talk about how much they want Tony back, they don't want Tony back. Because if you ruin the concept of death and permanence in the series, there's no stakes, nothing really matters, and people will stop being invested. Because they're not invested in the plot of the MCU, they're invested in the characters.
There are only a few characters I could see coming back in some of these like time travel-ish adventures. I could see them for a big fan, oh my God moment, having Steve Rogers show up in something where like, you know, it's in the past and he shouldn't be here, but something big's happening and these people need help. I could see something like that happening if they're playing with time travel too much.
Right.
I will say like. I talked about this a little bit in our Endgame review, but there was something that really, I like it. I like it a lot when movies will give characters an ending, like a real ending.
Yes.
And I'm
a big fan of things ending.
Yeah. I actually would actively never want to see Steve Rogers or Tony Stark back on the big screen ever again.
I got my ending, and bringing him back for any reason
would only cheapen that for me, even if it were just like, even if it made sense.
I'm cool with like old Steve showing up because he's not dead.
Old Steve is still alive.
Like if he shows up in Winter Soldier, which I kind of expect
him
to.
I'm sure he will.
That'll be fun.
Inevitably, like they might go visit him, saying like, hey, man, We got a problem here and we don't know how to deal with it. It's not my thing anymore. You're the hero now. Slaps him on the shoulder. Thanks, Cap.
Like an elder
now.
Yeah, like an elder statesman Steve Rogers is really cool, and I kinda hope they stick with that for a bit. Like,
I hope he runs for Marvel president.
And I also like, I wouldn't mind if like Nick Fury was like, hey, we still need a Captain America. We're going to make Steve Rogers a Skrull because no one knows that he's old.
He's still out in space somewhere.
I still have my whole pet theory that Nick Fury is going to be the person behind Secret Invasion. Like, it's not the it's not the Skrull like race doing something evil. It's Nick Fury wanting control over the world because that's how he keeps it safe. Which I think is super compelling and doesn't make Skrulls into a supervillain after you just set them up as immigrants, as like refugees.
I mean, clearly Secret Invasion is already kind of a thing, as we're now realizing a bunch of people running around are already Skrulls.
Exactly. And Nick Fury seems to be part of it. So I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's a cool version that also creates like some interesting character dynamics, like all these characters who might start working with Nick, right? Like Monica. She's they seem to be set up that she's going to be working with Nick Fury. She might be on the wrong side. That's interesting. Like, characters can like clash and have like ideological differences. Yeah. A secret police is cool.
It's why I don't really have a fear of the future for Marvel. I think it's going to keep ticking. And I think that this break that we've had from the movies, like the big movies coming out over and over again, twice yearly at least, has actually really helped that.
Yeah, my only hope is that they let more things stand on their own. Like, I'm not worried about the future of the MCU. I think they're still going to keep making fun movies, right? But I do hope they let more movies just be their own thing. I hope Falcon and the Winter Soldier is pretty much just about Sam coming into his own as Captain America and accepting that he's worthy to be Captain America. That's the story that they clearly want it to be, and I want that to pan out and not be sidetracked with other bullshit I don't care, like, that isn't core to the story that they're telling. You know what I mean?
Falcon and Winter Soldier, at least season one, I feel like, is just going to be a big sort of, I mean, it's obviously already a buddy cop thing, but there's this rivalry between Bucky and Falcon that, you know, they're both like, obviously Bucky in some way probably believes he is deserving of Cap's legacy. So they even showed kind of hints at that in the trailer where they're both kind of like staring at each other, looking over the shield. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be that rivalry aspect where who is truly deserving of the legacy. I'm pretty sure it's going to be Falcon.
Yeah. Well, and presumably they're also going to actually deal with some discussions of race and how that plays into all this, especially when there's a white Captain America in the trailer doing shows for people similar to how Steve was doing them back as for propaganda back in World War II. And discussion of like, well, who gets to be Captain America, right? Who gets to represent America? And that's an interesting question. And like, there's a lot of cool stuff. And like, US Agent is a very popular villain, and I'm pretty sure they're going to include that. And all that is really cool. And it seems like they're even going to include Isaiah Bradley as a character, which, if you guys know that Isaiah Bradley in the comics,
I do not.
Essentially, Isaiah Bradley is the first actual successful super soldier. Because back in World War II, they needed to test the serum on people. And everyone but one person died, and every single test subject was black. And Isaiah Bradley was the only successful super soldier before they made Steve a super soldier. So basically, they made a black super soldier and then said, okay, but we need a white guy. Which, it's a fucked up story, but it's connected to real things that happened in World War II, and it reckons with stuff that is worth bringing up, especially in the MCU where they tried to ignore the
Tuskegee Airmen and shit like that.
It's rough stuff, but it's also worth contending with, especially with how much we valorize everything in World War II and America's part in World War II, when it's a lot more fucked up on our part than we like to talk about.
That's history in a nutshell, let's right. be honest.
And I see a lot of value in tearing that down, and even like tearing down Captain America. But like, look, this legacy is complicated. It's not as simple as Steve's great, right?
Much like WandaVision, you can't move forward in either history or in your life until you deal with the problems of your past that are still eating away at you.
Exactly. And so I'm hoping they kind of deal with that.
That's awfully relevant right now.
It's always relevant.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, and it seems like that might be where they're going with Falcon and Winter Soldier, and all that stuff is genuinely interesting. That's not what they're selling the show on, because that's not how you sell a Marvel show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, give me one moment. Yeah.
His house is on fire.
Oh no.
Yep. Flames are crawling the walls. Be right back.
No, actually we're fine. I don't know why. Oh, sorry, everybody. It just went off. My god, that probably just fucking rest in peace.
It was loud.
Yeah.
No, I'm excited for where everything is going. I was not a huge fan of the fact that this ended up with like just a big blockbuster battle, but it didn't really take that much away from the show for me.
I still think it's a good show. It's just it could have been great, and it missed the mark.
I think before we go, I want to give a couple of like some like compliments, because there were some things throughout the entire show. I have to say, I actually don't remember the actress's name, but Agatha Harkness, I loved her all the way throughout.
Catherine Hahn.
Yeah, she was stupendous. Mm-hmm. I loved her performance in all of the different shows. I liked her as Agatha. Agatha all along is a fucking bop.
Like, they kept her alive.
And I skilled Sparky too.
Yeah. And they didn't kill off a villain that they can reuse and make good stories out of. Thank God.
Yeah.
Who else were you wanting to send up?
So some people have had mixed opinions on this. I love Paul Bettany as Vision. He nails that awkwardness so well without making him like, some people called him stilted and wood, and I'm like, he's perfect. I love him.
Oh, he's a dork. I love
him. He's supposed to be slightly stilted and wooden. He's a machine that's like only just now learning what empathy is.
They made him adorkable, and that's exactly, and like there was a little moment of that in Infinity War, but they really leaned into it here, and that's great. I would say like that was like the one like ultimate goal of the show that they 100% without any reservations, I say they succeeded, which is making Wanda and Vision likable and feel like the audience cares now about them.
I actually loved their chemistry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they like people didn't give a shit about Wanda and Vision, and now they do. That's a success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there were a lot of really cynical people on the internet. I know, shocker, says this cynical asshole here, but Vision's line, "What is grief but love persevering?" Like, it struck a chord with so many people, and a lot of assholes out there are making fun of people that struck a chord with. I'm like, why? That's a beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's I'm not going to say it's fucking poetry, but it's a good line. And anybody
it was the perfect line for that scene. Like, it doesn't have to be the best line in the world, but it was the best line for
anybody
the show.
Anybody who could take something away from that and make themselves feel better, that's great. That's an amazing win in my book.
Cinema people, honestly, like, cinema Twitter was being shitty about it. They're like, you haven't seen a real screenwriting. It's like, let people enjoy this. Like, there's nothing wrong with this.
It's chicken soup for the soul, motherfucker. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Some people will take any opportunity when somebody takes like something. Okay, every time, no matter what, whether it's a Marvel movie or just fucking some popcorn flick, there's going to be a line in there that somebody's going to say, "This was actually really good. I like this." And then cinema Twitter.
Oh, you Philistine!
It's like the people who decide like look, we can all agree that the last fucking season of Game of Thrones was awful. But hey, you know what? That shot where the fucking dragon takes off when she's walking is actually pretty cool. Like, I saw that, I'm like, ooh, okay, that's sick. And yes, some people were like, oh, this should be taught in film schools. I'm like, well, that's going a step too far. But then everyone overreacted to that and acted like a bunch of dicks. And it's like, guys, shut up, okay? Just let people enjoy the things
And if you think
go back to working on your screenplay.
Yeah.
Reed saved the cat for the millionth time. little screenwriter joke. Before we like leave, I know we've already hit over an hour, but
you're fine.
I want to ask a question I think is very interesting, and the audience can get in on, like, if you guys also have stuff, like, especially when this is on YouTube, like, tell us in the comments. It would be interesting to read.
Mm-hmm.
What Disney Plus show do you want from the MCU?
I'm already excited for Winter Soldier and Falcon and Winter Soldier. I'm excited for Loki. I'm not sure, like, where else I'd be really interested to see, because there are definitely some things that would make way better miniseries than they would a movie. Mm-hmm. WandaVision in particular was a great example of that.
Literally, that is something that only could work as a show.
Mm-hmm. Also throw out, Nick, I think you would agree, Heroes for Hire would make for a great miniseries.
I agree. They unfortunately would probably need to recast. Like, I almost feel like they need to redo that. They have a great Luke Cage, but I have never been sold on Iron Fist.
I think that actor can work. They just need to give him anything good.
They need to give him actual martial arts experience and... I don't know, like,
and give him anything resembling good material.
I love Heroes for Hire.
But yeah, like, Heroes for Hire would make for a great show. But my pie in the sky. People who follow me on Twitter know this. I've said this multiple times. I desperately, desperately want a live action Spider-Man show, because there's so many Spider-Man things that you can't explore in the movies, like more down to earth stuff. And if there was a show, it'd be perfect for me, because I think that's where Spider-Man should live.
There are two that I thought of. Sorry, aside from Heroes for Hire, which I do think would be a lot of fun. I think you could make a really cool mini series out of Damage Control, which is the crew within Marvel that goes around cleaning up after the collateral damage caused by superheroes. I think they kind of tipped their hat to it with the origin for the Vulture.
Yeah,
they were Spider-Man Homecoming.
That was going to be the cast of a Damage Control show, and then it didn't happen.
Yeah, but I still think they could do that in the future, and I think that would be pretty fun if they could get a fun cast for it. Other than that, Marvel's Suicide Squad, the Thunderbolts, I think could also be a pretty cool thing once you actually keep enough of your villains alive to do that.
Scott, sound like you had something to say.
So when it comes to Spider-Man, it's unfortunate, because I think there have been a couple of, like, I love Spectacular Spider-Man. And when it comes to a live-action Spider-Man show, I'm a little bit worried, because there is already so much CG in a regular Spider-Man series that, like, and people want to see the web swinging. They want to see the acrobatics. They want to see Spider-Man doing the spider things.
Have you seen the sequences in the Falcon and Winter Soldier trailer?
Hey, all I'm saying is, if they can be on par with that, then maybe, yeah, I could see that. Because, yeah, there are a lot of things that, yep, you just can't do when you got these hour and 52 hour long movies.
Well, and like half the fun of the new Spider-Man movies is the more down to earth stuff, right? So you could have mostly that, and then, you know, add some action scenes, and not all of them need to be huge fucking, you know, city-wide fights, but... You know, you can cap that off with the finale and keep the other ones a little more down, like, scaled down. And that's mostly what the movies have been doing anyway.
Yeah.
Like, they've been trying to keep it more like lower level stuff, except for the finales of the movies.
I'm a little bit sad, though, like, with what they've done specifically with this Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. They essentially just made they combined Peter and Miles. Which is a little frustrating, because now that he's got Ned, you don't have a Harry Osborn. And, like, so many shows and comics have already explored that relationship, so maybe that's not so much of a problem. Mm-hmm. But it is a little sad that, like, if we ever did get a TV series or any story moving forward, we'll never get Harry Osborn.
I don't want to say we'll never get him, but it would be handled differently. Mm-hmm. They could do it, you know, in the way that, like, well, I don't know. They could do it
We've also had, like, never had any inferences of an Oscorp.
Yeah, not a whole lot. I think we might have seen a bit of Roxxon, but I'm not sure.
Maybe.
But yeah, like it. I think they're giving themselves time, and I think that's fine. But like, you know, I don't want to get into how they could handle it, because like I could talk for another hour about Spider-Man. But
probably.
But Lord knows, like,
we will have time. But
yeah.
What about you guys at home? What do you think would make for a fun miniseries? I saw a lot of people here in the live Twitch chat. If you do want to join us Wednesdays at 3 o'clock every other Wednesday, a lot of people around here were saying She-Hulk would be a pretty fun miniseries.
Which
I'm pretty sure that's happening. Yeah.
They're also doing Moon Knight.
But Moon Knight. Yeah.
Oscar Isaac.
That's a good casting. I know a lot of people were thinking Keanu, but Oscar Isaac is a good call for that one. Anyway, what do you think? What'd you think of WandaVision? Are you excited for Cap, Winter Soldier? Anything else? Just let us know in the comments. And thank you so much for joining us for the TalkCast Pod Show. We'll see you guys next time. Stay happy and healthy, everybody.
Later.